Let's go right to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. Welcome John Runyon to the show, former Pro Bowler and 14-year NFL vet at offensive line. He's also a former All-10, Big Ten performer at Michigan in the mid-90s. Currently, among other things, he is the VP of Policy and Rules Administration of the NFL. Give him a follow on Twitter, at BigJDR. John, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing very well, John. And I have to admit, I was filled with a sense of pride in looking at your Twitter profile picture. I'm an old-school Houston Oilers fan. I consider myself an NFL bastard now. I just couldn't follow the team to Tennessee, unfortunately. But you're wearing an old-school Houston Oilers hat in your profile picture. Do you have any fond memories from your one season in Houston? You were a part of the Oilers' last draft class in 1996.
Yeah, I remember jumping up and down on the steel plate out in the middle of the Astrodome, and it being somewhat like a trampoline.
That was definitely not very kind turf indeed. And speaking of pride, this Michigan team here in 2018 includes a guy that you're pretty familiar with. Your son, John Runyon Jr., has fulfilled the legacy that is playing for Michigan football. How much pride do you have in getting to watch John be a part of this Michigan squad over these last few years and going into his senior season now as well?
No, I mean, it's awesome. It's not something I really pushed on him. I think my son's been quoted saying it before, you know, and I always told him, you know, anywhere it's free but Ohio State. So, but he did, you know, and it's awesome. You know, you worry about a little bit as a father about putting, you know, some kind of expectation on performance and all that kind of stuff. And obviously, you know, the expectations that are set for all these student athletes in college sometimes are really high, but you do have to remember they're, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids at the end of the day. They're going to make mistakes, do stupid things, and, you know, that's part of the growing pains. And, you know, also, you know, pushing him to make sure he's taking advantage of the opportunities he's given. So, looks like he's on that path right now. I know the coaching staff, especially the strength staff, has been really high on him. He's put in all the time he could, and he put in all the extra work too. So, you know, he's doing the right thing, and I've lost some weight in the past few years, but he's got me by 20 pounds now. So,
wow, how about that one? And well, speaking of the subject of pressure and expectations, a lot of people around college football, a lot of people who follow this Michigan program, consider this to be a pretty pivotal year for Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. Do you agree with that sentiment?
It is to a point. I mean, you know, obviously being in a large program like that and then coming in with the fanfare that Jim actually did, there's a lot of pressure on him. Jim is a great coach. He does things the way he wants to. I mean, I'm sure he's not the most radio interview, if you will, at the end of the day, but he's not there to give interviews. He's there to make these guys efficient and execute football very, very technically. So that's part of the challenge he's had. I mean, you go through last year with the carousel, especially on the offensive side at offensive line and quarterback. So it's something I still think they're working through right now, trying to find the best fit. You know, that so far from what I've seen, it looks pretty promising.
Does it seem like Shea Patterson is on track to be this team's starting quarterback in week one, or do you still think that a guy like Christian Peters and maybe even to a lesser degree McCaffrey may still find their way under center for that first week matchup with Notre Dame?
I mean, I think it really depends on what avenue they're going. Obviously, Patterson's a little more mobile of a quarterback, so if you're going to do the read option stuff more often than not, he's the guy. But if you get into a situation where you're going to change it up and, you know, do that kind of stuff, herein lies the other thing, too. Injuries play a huge part of it. And do you actually change the offense for those 1 or 2 weeks where you got to go with the second guy, whoever that may be? And, you know, that's a decision that Jim and his staff has to make. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, I know Jim doesn't tip his hat at everything, but, you know, from the stuff you kind of see going around, I mean, you know, Patterson and Peters can be the guy. I think ultimately what it comes down to is continuity, you know, with the guys up front being able to pick up blitzes. Because I've watched it from afar, watched a little bit of spring ball with what Don Brown throws at him from that defense. that quarterback and that offensive line got to be on the same page, and we'll hope that that stress that they're getting there day to day in practice is something that's going to make them a lot better and actually make playing in the regular season a lot simpler for those guys.
That's a great point about Don Brown and that controlled chaos he throws at offenses. And the offensive line last year, John, was one that really struggled in pass protection. Now, your son is slated to perhaps start at the right tackle position this year. Do John Jr. and his line mates feel like they're going to be much better off in 2018 because of some of the struggles they went through last season?
Yeah, and I think some of it, too, is, you know, bringing in Ed Wardner as the offensive line coach and trying to simplify everything. Because I always said this when I played. A defensive coordinator, like when I was with the Eagles, we had Jim Johnson over there throwing everything just like Don Brown does. If you have an offensive lineman thinking about what his assignments are, he's going to be laid off the ball, his feet are going to be slow, and you're going to get beat. And that's the biggest thing. When you simplify it, everybody knows what they're doing. It's almost nonverbal communication. You can just point sometimes and know that you're changing blocking assignments and all that kind of stuff. That's where you pick up those unexpected things. That's where the quarterback doesn't have to throw hot all the time. And now you got one-on-one coverage on the outside, and you can take those shots.
So shifting over to defense, John, you mentioned Coach Brown, Dr. Blitz. Is that what he's known for? A couple years ago, they had to replace 9 starters on defense, and they remained in the top 10. This year, they're only replacing 1. They're in the top of the unit rankings from one of the best defensive lines, linebackers, and secondary groups in the country. What do you expect out of this defense, and is it going to continue to climb up with really, you know, it's giving Michigan a chance to stay in ball games and ultimately – getting over the hump of beating Ohio State and Sparty in-state, that's got to be their top goals. What are you expecting from the defense again this year in Dr. Blitz?
Well, I think one thing, I think the defense is going to be on par where it's been. I think the bigger thing is the balance there. You know, is the offense doing its job and not putting the defense in those positions to where Don can take more risks and actually, you know, now inflate the score. You know what I mean? He can take more chances because he's not trying to contain somebody. He's not playing from behind. He can get a little more aggressive and try things that confuses people that people haven't seen before. So there's that balance that I think people forget about a lot of times that you have to play off as a whole team concept. Even take that over to special teams. When you have leads and that kind of stuff, you can take a little bit of chances. You can do fakes. You can go for it more on fourth. Not that Jim doesn't go for it on fourth down a lot, but you know, you can do that type of stuff when you have that confidence on both sides of the ball.
You mentioned, you know, it's good for the offense to play against a defense like this. And that goes for a lot of college programs. If you're really good on one side of the ball, it really should push the other to come up to their level. I've heard that Shea Patterson, the new quarterback there in Ann Arbor, has been actually sitting in on film sessions with Don Brown to try to not only help him, you know, pick up, notice things, see things, read things, look for adjustments, but to get a better overall sense of what he should expect in the Big Ten. Is that something Shea? Is that something that's common with Harbaugh, to let his quarterbacks kind of pick the brains of the DC, or is it just the greatness of Don Brown that can help in all angles?
Well, I think it's the biggest thing. It's, you know, it's Jim, it's, you know, the offensive coach has given him the ability to go in and say, go to a defensive coordinator and say, how are you breaking down our protection? How are you trying to disguise coverage? You know, and that's a learning opportunity that not a lot of coaches give their quarterbacks. They're just trying to do it off of tape instead of learning the tricks of the trade. You know, you got to know more. You got to know as much about the defense as you do the offense to be able to manage that type of stuff. Because ultimately, what happens is you're going to get 1 or 2 defensive looks a game that are going to be the difference in the game. Because what are most football games? The difference is 3 or 4 plays. And if you're there and you recognize it and you can adjust the protection or check out into another play and take advantage of that opportunity, most likely that defensive coordinator is not going to call that defense again because you have a way to get out of it and you have a way to fix it. Otherwise, they're going to continue to beat you up with it and it's going to look embarrassing. So it's great for the staff to actually recognize that and let him sit in on those meetings, try to learn some of those tricks.
Talking to longtime NFLer and Michigan alum John Runyon. And, John, I'm looking at this Wolverine schedule and seeing some really brutal road matchups this year. You finish the season off at Ohio State. You also play at Michigan State this year. But the season starts out at Notre Dame. This is after a three-year break in this rivalry. Are you happy to see Notre Dame back on the Michigan schedule? And do you have a favorite moment from your time of playing with the Wolverines of going up against the Fighting Irish?
I know the two times we played the Irish, we struggled a little bit. I think we lost one and won one. And I remember my last time on being on punt protection was against Notre Dame because we got one run back on us. So, unfortunately, my memory is always in the negative aspect of it. But, no, it is a great rivalry of two, you know, amazing programs in college football history. So it's great to be back on. And I know the you know, both universities like it. Unfortunately, you know, they are not only in the business of education and, you know, intercollegiate athletics, but it does have a hefty price tag on it. So it's one of those things where, you know, people sometimes forget about the business aspect of it. And it's sometimes it is beneficial to take the leave of absence and, you know, trying to restoke the flame of that rivalry. But it is one of those ones. Especially, you know, I grew up in Michigan, and that's something you look forward to. I mean, no matter who was playing Notre Dame, whether it was Michigan State or Ohio State, if the Michigan game wasn't on at the same time, you were watching, you know, those other Big Ten foes playing against the Irish.
I want to shift just a little bit to the NFL, John, because, you know, I'm a big Dallas Cowboys fan. That's pretty well known. And in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, the Philadelphia Eagles pretty much ran the NFC. You were part of a team that played for four consecutive NFC title games and even a Super Bowl, which you guys almost pulled out. What was that experience being like with Andy Reid and with Jim Johnson and then kind of Donovan McNabb and that whole group, Westbrook and everything? What do you ever, you know, have do you ever still think about those games and the what ifs and how close and just how much success you had in the NFL?
Yeah, you really do, and you remember when, you know, when I first got to Philadelphia, with how Andy Reid was conducting himself and, you know, getting rid of guys that weren't buying into what he was doing and all that kind of stuff. Kind of, you know, it reverts back to what we were just talking to, how Jim Harbaugh still, you know, just in the process. I think he's probably got all his – well, I can't say that because my son wasn't even one of his recruits. He was one of Brady Hoke's recruits. So he still doesn't have all his own people in there all the time. So, and Andy Reid went down that process. And then you got to the point where you realize, you know what, we're capable of this. And it's just not about executing. It's actually about going out there with the confidence and the swagger. And that is what actually made the game fun and actually made you play a lot better. And, you know, that is one of the things. I know that year of that Super Bowl, that was probably one of the most amazing fun years. And it really wasn't that hard just because you had that. It was just that confidence you had as an individual and as a team that you were going to go out and execute. And that's where you need to get to be one of those elite teams.
Because the meat of your NFL career was in Philadelphia, did you find yourself filled with pride in watching the Eagles win the Super Bowl earlier this year?
Yes, a little bit, but working for the league office, got to be a little bit impartial.
Totally understandable.
No, but I was there, you know, I know most of the coaching staff, you know, all the front office people are the same. So, you know, it was great to see him because you understand, you know, what Jeffrey Lurie was going through and his passion for it. And, you know, obviously going out a few years back and taking a chance on Chip Kelly, obviously it didn't work out, but, you know, he wasn't, Jeffrey and his ownership group obviously weren't afraid to go out and make a change and took a chance on somebody like Doug Peterson, and it paid off for him.
Speaking of your responsibilities in the league office, you are the VP of Policy and Rules Administration in the NFL. What exactly does that job entail?
That entails a bunch of stuff. Obviously, the rules administration. So I'm in charge of all of our on-field compliance. So any player safety rule, any unsportsmanlike conduct that the players break on the field, obviously illegal hits, all that kind of stuff, branding, uniform compliance. We're in charge of all that, and we administer all the discipline that is actually negotiated with the union. So. just going through all the plays of the week and, you know, confirming or denying that there was a rules violation and or the officiating staff actually didn't call it on the field, there can still be discipline administered after the fact, you know, even if the officials missed it. So that, and then the policy really comes in kind of from my past experience of being a member of the House of Representatives from the state of New Jersey, and the legislative process of actually having, I always look at this, I go, you look at the NFL rule book that has a lot of legal kind of phrases and how it flows, but when the policy is written, we kind of put it in football sense and push it out to the player so it can help them understand, you know, all those policy, or not all the policies, but all the rules that are actually in the book, make it simpler and a much better read. And sometimes it actually helps the fans and you guys out too, where you don't have to read all the lawyer language all the time.
It's totally understandable, and I appreciate certain rule changes this year, like what's happening with kickoffs now. I think that's helping with player safety. One big topic of conversation, especially among players, is the change in how you are able to tackle with your helmet. Is that one of the more difficult things that you've ever had to really work your way through? Do you think you guys are making headways with helping the players understand what's right and wrong as it pertains to tackling with their helmets as well?
Yeah, and this is going to be a huge culture change. I mean, you see how guys are tackling now with their head down and all that. And I know since we were all, 10, 12 years old, everybody's been told to see what you hit, and you don't see guys doing it. So this is a huge culture shift, because we got to remember why we're doing this. And at the top of the list is player safety. You can put in, you know, back in the day, it used to be you're going to break your neck, you're going to end up paralyzed. But now, you know, in the time of brain injury and concussions, you have to be very aware of that. And if you're going in, leading with your head down at a bad angle, you're creating unnecessary forces that are ultimately not only going to affect your brain, but your neck and your back long term. So this is a culture change. It's not going to happen overnight. And I know a lot of people want to fight it, and they're afraid of change, but this is part of the evolution of rules and player safety. And I you constantly got to remind guys that play this game and coach this game why we're doing this. And ultimately it comes back to taking care of the players and protecting them.
That's totally understandable. And also, despite the short-term thinking that it takes away from the physicality of the game, John, the big picture thinking is this allows a certain level of physicality to remain in the game. I mean, people wonder about the future of football all the time and wonder if in 20, 30, 40 years down the road, we see what is essentially flag or touch football in place of what we currently know to be the game of football. But it's rule changes like this that allow there to remain a certain physicality within this wonderful game of football.
Yeah, and, you know, this may seem kind of snarky or a little bit off the cuff when I say this, but I say this all the time. I goes, if we don't fix our game, someone in Washington, D.C. is going to fix it for us. they have a tendency to overreact, and you can imagine what their fix is going to do to the game.
No doubt about that. And you mentioned that you did spend a little bit of time in the government. Was that the biggest challenge you ever had to deal with in terms of your career? Of course, you spent much of your adult life in the game of football. Just how big of a challenge was working in the government?
Well, I mean, you think about football and you think about sports as something you've evolved in since you were a child. And when I got into politics, I jumped into that in my mid-30s. I'd never taken a political science course in my life, never been to law school or anything. So you jump into that about chest deep, and, you know, it took you a good year to get your feet under you to figure out where everybody was coming from and how to react to it. So it was a challenge, but it was a different thing. And I could tell you, it was an honor to serve. And you know what? It made me a better person. It kind of, you know, took some blinders off to look at other people's perspectives and see where people were coming from and actually think through it. And frankly, to this day, it helps me in my job here at the NFL.
And that's not only the only non-football job that you've held in the last 5 years or so. There were some stories that came out in the last year that you were actually driving for Uber on occasion. Do you still flip on the Uber app every so often and offer rides up to people?
No, I haven't done that in over a year now. It's getting a little too busy between having, well, I just dropped my second child off at the University of Purdue. So,
oh, congrats.
So just got back from there on Monday night. So going around making sure everybody's all right, trying to keep the wife sane so she can see her, so we can see our kids together. So it gets a little bit hectic around here.
Totally understandable. Congratulations on getting that second kid off to school. And it's prediction time now, John. Going to ask you, not necessarily for a Purdue Boilermakers prediction, but I do want to know what you think is going to happen for Michigan football in 2018.
Well, I'm really where everybody else is. It's really hard to call now till you figure out who the quarterback is and how the continuity of that line. Here's the thing, and I'll say this, and I said this all the time when I played, especially with the Eagles. If they're saying you have a chance, you have a chance. You know, you're not going into the season and say, well, we're lucky to make a bowl game. I don't think that's an option. The one thing I worry about, specifically with college football, is are you performing at that high level against this year, obviously, the Western Michigan, the Southern Methodist? Are you playing at that level, or are you going to play down to their level? I think that's really going to be the key to that. Obviously, for Notre Dame kickoff, you're going to be geeked up, but those next 3 weeks, you're going to play some smaller schools. Are you going to play down to their level, or does Jim have those guys tuned up, ready to go? I think those three games right there early in the season, no matter what happens against Notre Dame, are really going to tell you what the character of this team is. And that's where I say to people, start making your predictions at that point, because you're going to see if they're for real or not.
John Runyon is a former Pro Bowler and 14-year NFL vetted offensive line. He also was an All-Big Ten performer at Michigan in the mid-90s. Currently, amongst other things, he is the VP of Policy and Rules Administration in the NFL. Also been nice enough to join us for the last 15 minutes or so to talk Michigan football and a little bit of NFL. John, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it, man.
Not a problem, guys. Good talking to you.
Appreciate it, John.